WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
In the new film Mystery Train, Rick Avilés plays Will Robinson, the buddy of the character played by Joe Strummer of the British band The Clash. Mystery Train takes place in Memphis, far from the Lower East Side Manhattan neighborhood where Avilés grew up and a Puerto Rican family. Avilés also does stand-up comedy and was a regular on TV's It's Showtime at the Apollo, but he began his career as a street comic. It started when he was living in Boston.
There were jugglers and mimes at the time. This was about 10 years ago, 12 years ago. But I never saw stand-up comedians. And just one day, during lunchtime, because I was working at a printing firm, one day at lunch I just said, at the top of my lungs, "It's showtime!" And I screamed out, and for about 10 seconds I thought I'd like lost my mind. And so what am I doing screaming at the top of my lungs in front of strangers? And I actually gathered a crowd, and I did like some impressions, and that was the start of it. I mean, I think I made like $5 that day, and that was it. I was hooked.
What are some of the locations you've played over the years?
I used to do in the front of the library and on Fifth Avenue on 42nd Street, and in the back of the library, which is called Bryant Park. I performed in Central Park, of Washington Square Park, right inside the fountain. I used to stand on a hydrant on Bleecker Street, and there was also another hydrant that I would stand on. And it wasn't one of those pointy hydrants. There was one of those things with the two spouts coming out of them, so it was flat, so I could stand. There was one on 6th Avenue in Greenwich Village as well. So,
did you ever do trains?
Oh, yeah. For a while, when it got cold, I supported myself for a while doing stand-up, and when it got cold, you couldn't perform on the street. I remember it, when it hit 50 degrees, I knew it was time, or under 50 degrees, it was time to go underground. And in the case of subways, it definitely was on the ground. But I used to perform like on the A train between, there was an express stop from 59th Street to 125th Street. And that's a long ride, so I mean, I could do a nice show. And I used to tell the people, I hope you don't think I was doing this for free. I didn't have to be here. I could have been in your house taking your stereo, so please give generously.
Did people get intimidated when you'd say that?
I think so. I didn't want to scare them, but I also didn't want to work for free either, so.
One of the things that you do when you're doing stand-up is different ethnic variations, like you do different versions of someone selling dope, and you have like a black dealer, a Jewish dealer, a Hispanic dealer. You do a thing where you do different gay people, like a black gay, a white gay, a Hispanic gay. Do people ever get offended when you do your ethnic impressions? And what's the way to do it without being offensive?
Well, I don't think I might have heard one person in 12 years tell me that they were offended. And I mean, that's a good percentage. I like not to offend anyone. The way you do it to not offend is to be accurate in your characterizations and also in your setup. Like, you know, there's a line that I do before I do like ethnic queens, and I say, you know, where do gay people come from? And I say, our families. Where do you think they come from? A planet Homo, and they're invading. No, they come here. There's a cousin, there's a nephew, there's a brother, a sister. I said, and I talk about how I dislike comedians that make fun of gays. I said, but it's fun to watch queens, and that's how I set it up. And I do like, these mincing queens like the black queen. That's right, Miss Thing, your mother loves the child. And the Puerto Rican queen, oh, he's so cute, I want to know his name. Oh, I love him. And the white queen is like, oh, I'm so mad. Philip is so insensitive. You know what I mean? It's accurate. I mean, everybody knows somebody like that also has heard that voice before. So, you know, it's hard to be offended at truth. There's honesty in my work.
When did you start moving indoors from performing on the streets, and how did you start doing it?
I think I made that transition about 5 years ago. I met a woman who was a lawyer and wasn't doing much with her law degree, and we sort of both came to the decision that maybe she and I would do well in business, her acting as my manager. She's the one who, like, sort of decided, Rick, it's time to not give it away on the streets anymore. And we started doing more club dates, inside dates.
Did you start finding that your timing had to change when you were playing in clubs instead of on the street?
No, not so much. In fact, you have to maintain the same energy that you do on the street as you do in a club. At least I do, because if I find that I'm just standing in front of a microphone trying to be funny as opposed to putting my all into it and giving it the same street kind of energy, then I'm really cheating my audience and cheating myself as a performer. I do want to, you know, emphasize that another reason I had to get away from street performing and why she insisted so much on me not street performing is that I started to view my work as a hustle. I mean, a hustle is a way to make money quickly. That's why I viewed it as a hustle.
Uh-huh.
It's an outlaw kind of thing, too. I didn't have there's no license to street perform, and there's no one telling you when you're on this, so there's really no holes barred in when you can perform or how much time you have to perform. So you almost feel like an outlaw when you're doing it. And because you made quick money, I mean, immediately, I mean, it's instant gratification, you know?
Mm-hmm. There was a period, I understand, when your career kind of took a nosedive and that you were having a lot of problems yourself, and you were even living on the streets for a while. Is that right?
Things were really bad. And there again, I mean, that goes right back to street performing and hustling. See, when you make that money fast, you tend to spend it fast. And I didn't have a lot of values when I was street performing. I wanted to make money. And I got involved with drugs. I mean, I had a big drug problem. And that just kind of made, like, you know, careers is on hold if you're really involved with drugs. And some people can do it, but I certainly couldn't. I mean, there was definitely, I was supposed to show up on an audition and, you know, I'd be nodding off in the corner somewhere. There was a real dark period in my life.
Mm-hmm. In Mystery Train, the character that you play is actually black. I was wondering if that made a difference to you, you know, playing someone who is black instead of Hispanic.
No, not at all. I thoroughly loved playing that character. And Jim Jarmusch is such a wise director. I mean, that he brought me down like a week earlier and some other people down a little earlier just to get a feel of Memphis. An interesting thing about playing a black character, for a long time I had an identity crisis because I'm Hispanic, but we spoke English at home. So, I mean, my main hangout was with, you know, inner city blacks. I mean, I grew up thinking, you know, like, my name should have been Johnson, you know what I'm saying? but it was sort of easy for me to play a black. What was difficult was playing a southern black. I mean, mm-hmm. And it sort of challenging for me to try to be convincing, you know, as a black southerner. I mean, a native Memphian. And I don't know, I thought I did okay. And some other people have told me that they like my work. So I'm not going to be too critical. Because every time I see the film, well, I could have done that a little deep. Well, it could have been more sudden, you know. So I don't know. But I have no qualms. I think someone asked me, well, what do you want? I said, well, I'm looking for that to play the white guy. I mean, if a dark-skinned Hispanic can play black, I mean, why don't I get that long hair and for that biz? Isn't there a Biff role out there for me?
Biff, yes? How's it going? Fine. Just great.
I imagine there's even fewer Hispanic roles than there are black roles in movies and TV.
Yeah, I think there's not a lot. But it seems to me that there are a lot more now than there were before. And that might be, and there might be a lot of roles opening up, because you can just imagine they're gonna do a Noriega film, you know. And I think Edward Almos would be a great Noriega. And
what part do you see for yourself?
Well, one of those generals or somebody there. There's got to be something I can do.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, I'm so glad you had me on here.
Actor and comic Rick Aviles.
I bet if a cockroach could talk, they would be upset. Boy, they'd band together and say to humans, "Spray me! Spray me! You decon my mother! And you black flag! My fault! You tried to raid my baby sister! Now you want to check me into one of those motels?"
Hey, take care now. Thank you.
This is Fresh Air.